Nate, if you could, I'd like to ask you to turn your lamp on pink. It's a real pleasure to come to Assembly on this cold morning and experience a warm fellowship here at Assembly. It's on this Martin Luther King Commemoration Day, it seems appropriate to, and it seems to me that we have elements that fit what he described as his beloved community. Elements of acceptance, of welcome, and of caring for each other. Mary Oliver said, "Tell me, what is it that you plan for your one precious life? Is there a plan? Is there a direction? Is there a goal? Is there something out there that you are striving for that you emulate?" What I have to say this morning has to do with this process of what you plan for your life. Life is a process of becoming, in my view. It's not a one-time conversion experience. It is a life of becoming. And we are all on that road of becoming. And whether we achieve that or not at the end of life depends to some extent on our effort and our intention. Oliver Wendell Holmes said, "Most of us go to our graves with the music still inside us." Music still inside us. Let me tell you a story about Irene. Elmer and Irene came to my office frequently for Elmer's medical problems. And Elmer was of the old school. He was He believed that he was the head of the household. He believed he was the decision maker, the provider. And he also thought that that Irene, her role would be that of supporting him. And indeed, for 40 years, Irene did support him in that role. After Elmer died, I didn't hear from Irene for some number of months. And when I did, I was surprised to learn that she had become a much sought-after and inspiring speaker. And it turns out that she had been writing poetry all her life in secret. She had discovered who she was. She had discovered that she was all along a poet. And now she found a way to express that. She found a way to express the music inside her. And in expressing that, she gave inspiration to other people. So, I urge you, sisters and brothers, do not be conformed to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds, that you can know the pleasing, perfect will of God. These days, we're in this seemingly unending process of political season, and I counted up, we have about 10 months to endure yet, at least, until there might be a little bit of a respite. But during this time, you hear the word unprecedented. One of the news commentators is charging her commentator guests when they come on, charging them $2 every time they say the word unprecedented. And in the days of fake news, of alternate facts, it's really hard to decide what is real. Reality can be very hard to get at. And newscasters try to find ever more colorful ways of saying things. For example, "I'm gobsmacked by the way the American people is being gaslighted." You got that? And if anyone can explain that to me afterward, I would appreciate it. So truth and reality are really in question. And so where do we look in terms of renewing our mind? Where do we look? And it seems to me that there is a need for a guide, for a beacon, for something to aim forward, for something to guide our thoughts and our speech. And I would like to suggest, as was evident in the scriptures, that we turn to the mind of Christ, the mind of Christ. Philippians 2:5 says, in relationship with one another, have the same mindset as Christ. If we have the mindset of Christ, we will indeed reflect the priorities and the values of Jesus. And our entire landscape will be affected by that if we have the mindset of Christ. So what was the mindset of Christ? How do we get in touch with that? Let's look at some of the things that the life and teachings of Jesus suggest was his mindset. First of all, he was certainly a person of compassion, a person who showed his compassion by feeding the poor, by healing the sick, his compassion for the poor, for the downcast, and for the outcast. He was humble. He did not aspire to take the place, but he took the form of a servant and served other people. In everything he did, he gave glory to God. He was inclusive. He shocked his associates, the people that followed him. He shocked them by the people he kept company with and even ate with them, tax collectors and other people who were despised by the community. He confronted justice. He talked about justice and indeed in his, sometimes called his commission, in Luke 4, he talked about releasing the prisoners and bringing justice. And then most importantly for us, I think, is that he spent time in reflection and prayer. What is it all about? How do I put this all together? 1 Corinthians 2:16. For who has known the mind of the Lord that we may instruct him? And how often we do try to instruct the Lord. But we have the mind of Christ. We have the mind of Christ. You know, prominent in Orthodox theology is the concept, the precept of theosis. Theosis is the idea of divinization, of deification, of this process, a lifelong process, of becoming godlike, of taking on the attributes of God and portraying those and living those out. So what can get in the way of the minds of appropriating, of renewing our mind, of being in touch with the mindset of Jesus? I think there are a number of things. First of all, our preoccupation with money, status, and just accumulating stuff, it seems to me. Secondly, I think artificial intelligence and technology can get in the way, and something that we will face increasingly in the future. Did you know that 40% of us actually think that our computers have a personality? And that means you can scold them and try to correct them and talk to them. Alexa talks to me. And when I go to, at the end of the day, I usually ask Alexa for the day's news. And she gets very confidential and she kind of seems to lean in and says, Glenn, here's your news. And I resist the temptation to say, thank you, Alexa. So we have these things that are coming upon us. It is said that artificial intelligence can make decisions 10 times faster and more accurately, and make complex decisions 10 times faster and more accurately than human beings. I suggest that this can get in the way of our renewing our minds and getting in touch with the mind of Jesus. But I'd like to talk about one other thing, and that is our desire for an uncluttered, regulated life without any unpredictability. Everything is predictable, a life of ease. In the morning we know what's going to happen, and it happens. And in the evening we go to bed and nothing, and no stressors, nothing unusual. And we look for that life. And yet, I would like to suggest that that does not contribute to our growth and to our to a life of getting in touch with the mind of Jesus. You know, we're all creatures of habits. Habits, if you put your fingers together, look at what finger is in front. Now do it the other way with the other finger in front, and it's not normal. The way you fold your arms is a habit. The way I part my hair, well, that's... Actually, I haven't thought about how I part my hair for more than 25 years. But, so these are habits. Habits are good. Habits take away the need for these day-to-day decisions and make for an easier life. However, I would suggest that a fully habituated life can lead to us not looking to the right, to the left, not looking for new experiences, not looking for a diversity in the people we meet and in what we experience. And therefore, we miss the opportunity for growing and becoming. Becoming what God has created us, becoming why we're put here on earth. So let me tell you a quick story. A number of years ago, we lived in Bell Fountain, Ohio, and my presence was needed urgently at a meeting in Elkhart, and so they sent a plane for me. It was an overcast day, thick cloud cover, and we rose up through the clouds and got into sunshine at about 6,000 feet, got a bearing from Fort Wayne radar station, who then transferred us to Elkhart, to the radar station. As we approached Elkhart, it was still fully overcast, no landing field in sight anywhere, and we began our descent into the airport. I watched the altimeter go down from 6,000 to 5,000, 4,000. Finally, at about 1,200 feet, we burst into the clear, and there was a landing field right in front of us, and we were on a perfect glide pattern. We had been on autopilot all the way. And let me say, what I'm suggesting is that autopilot is a good thing for a plane. Autopilot is not something I think we should aspire to. We should not aspire to being on autopilot, to becoming so habituated that we do not seek diversity. Seek and welcome diversity again in the people we meet and the experiences we do. So I urge you, sisters and brothers, do not be conformed to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds, that you can know the perfect, pleasing will of God. So how does transformation come about? Let me tell you an experience of our transformation. Marilyn and I, many of you know Marilyn and I, spent 7 years in India working with MCC. We were strangers in a strange place, in a strange culture, but we had many friends. I called the home of one of my friends, and a daughter, a 12-year-old daughter, answered the phone. And she went running to her mother when I asked to speak to her mother. Her mother told me that she came to her and said, "It's that nice man with the pink head." So we were, clearly we were strangers in a strange place, but we felt comfortable, we felt welcome, and we had many friends among the people with whom we lived and worked. Manjula was one of the people we lived and worked with. She was our secretary. Manjula had been a tea taster before she came to work for MCC. And she invited us to come to her home for dinner. Manjula had three sisters, one brother, and her parents. We arrived in the home, and the home had as a one room, about 24 by 24 feet, a high ceiling. Seven people lived in that room. The room was tidy and clean. Shelves along the walls to hold the things necessary for living. We sat at the table talking to the four daughters. We shared our stories. They shared their stories. We shared with openness and vulnerability. I remember that we leaned in as we avidly listened and affirmed each other in the stories. The stories were told honestly without any kind of game playing. And at no time that we were there was there any suggestion of any embarrassment or any apology for their humble dwelling. They knew where we came from. They knew we had beautiful big homes, and yet that was not important. What was important that we relate to each other. And so this became for us a real time transformation. Let me go through what I think are some of the elements of that. First of all, we moved a bit out of our comfort zone. This was not the most comfortable thing to do. We could have stayed at home in our nice apartment and read a book. We moved out of our comfort zone. We listened carefully to each other's stories, again, with vulnerability, with openness, and with honesty. And we accepted. So we felt and we gave an acceptance of the space in which each of us lived, without any judgment or critique, without making any comments about, but simply validating them in their space, and validating them as persons, and doing that. Validating them as fellow human beings on much the same journey. And we left there feeling with a warm glow, feeling that we had really been in the presence of friends, and the feeling that comes when you truly go from being a stranger to a friend. And in thinking about that, it seemed as though it was because of this acceptance. And we recognized that feeling, we owned that feeling, and then we spent time in reflection. And again, let me say how important reflection is. And by the way, I don't think you can do reflection as I do sometimes. I reflect in the 37 seconds it takes my computer to warm up. It takes longer than that. It satisfied time for prayer and reflection. So this was a transformation in hospitality and how to do hospitality for us. So we seek the mind. We seek the mind that is ever growing, ever seeking, and ever becoming. Let me just summarize by saying some of what some of the parts of this are. I think, first of all, this becoming is a lifelong process. If your primary spiritual experience was in a haymow on December 23rd, 1972, that's fine with me. That's wonderful. Good for you. But I feel that we need this lifelong concept and the need to become, to be ever in a state of becoming. And then we need to seek diversity, as I said. If we don't seek diversity, we will become habituated, we will tend to be on autopilot, and we will be stunted in our growth and in our ability to take on the mind of Jesus. And then we need to recognize that there are feelings, and to own those feelings, and to ask what they mean. Certainly, as we left that humble house that evening, we told each other, you know, we really would not have been better treated or could not feel better had we been in the home of a Maharaja. It was that kind of an evening for us. And then we need that time for reflection and prayer. And without that, the process will be incomplete. And I think we also need an attitude of expectancy. David White, who's an Irish philosopher poet, said that we need to live in the expectation of imminent surprise. Imminent surprise. After I read that a few weeks ago, I came to church and listened to the sermon in the expectation of imminent surprise. And I think it did make a difference to expect surprise, live in the moment. So we're on a process of reflection, of living out, of becoming, and becoming what we feel that God has created us to be. And that's what will bring the gleam back to our eyes, will bring the music back to our souls, and will energize our minds and our bodies. And once having done that, we can then be in a position to fulfill the prayer of Jesus when he prayed, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." Mother Teresa recognized that the sum of life was not made up generally of a lot of big decisions, but in the small things. And so her formula was do small deeds with great love. I think what I've been trying to say this morning can maybe be best summarized in a few words written by Edwin Hatch nearly 150 years ago. He wrote these words that you will recognize. "Breathe on me, breath of God. Fill me with life anew, that I may love what thou dost love and do what thou wouldst do." Amen.